We'll call the Legislative Energy Commission to order. And today we're going to focus more on the structure again of the Legislative Energy Commission and get some input about other types of commissions that have been developed. First of all, I'd like members to look at the bylaws that have been drafted. Now, we did receive a letter from Representative Tori Westrum and Senator Julie Rosen asking if we would wait on voting on these. Apparently, people want more time to review them. Let me say that they were drafted by Mr. Hubinger, and they're pretty consistent with the other commissions that are in existence currently. So the other thing is that they can be amended at any time, too. But I'd like you to look at them if you have any comments at this time. Otherwise, I think we'll put them aside until the next meeting to vote on them. Any comments? Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Sandrum.
Madam Chair, I think I know the answer to this. I'm just going to ask anyway. For instance, on line 19, where it talks about the 3 days, and maybe this is public law, but is there a provision for public posting of these meetings? That's probably state law, isn't it?
Mr. Chair, or Senator Sandrum, I believe that that is state law. We do post them sooner, though, and we recognize, especially in the summertime, that people have a hard time making or changing commitments they already have. So I think this meeting was posted on May 29th. And we will do that as much as possible. In fact, we'll probably try to give you notice a month ahead of time. Or
no, but I'm hoping that we can do that until late July.
At this point, we're scheduling the next meeting between mid and late July, and we'll get a date out as soon as possible. Other questions or comments? Let's put those aside, then we'll pick that up again at our next meeting. Representative Hilty and I have had long discussions. I've had discussions with members of the commission and with other members of commissions trying to identify what would be the best direction to go with our commission. And Representative Hilty and I both agree that we would like this to be a meaningful commission, one that looks at state policy on energy and does a thorough review and perhaps pulls together potential legislation. And so what we were looking at was other commissions that have done similar things, and a couple of those have been the former Legislative Water Commission, the former Commission on Waste Management, and more recently we had the Healthcare Access Commission that did significant healthcare reform. And so what we would like to do is to ask staff from those commissions come forward and tell us how those commissions were organized and how they went about setting up their reform and promoting legislative packages for the following session. And so I'd like to start by calling up Susan Schmidt and Kim Ostrian. Okay, welcome.
Thank you.
And who'd like to begin?
Well, I see you've got Susan first on the agenda, but we had a little conversation before we came, and I drew the straw. So,
good.
My name is Kim Ostrian, and I'm the former director of the Legislative Commission on Waste Management. And I want to thank you for inviting me here today. I think it's a great idea to, as you move forward, to learn from the experiences, both good and bad, from the commissions of the past. So I hope my comments will help that process move forward. Bob sent me a list of about 12 questions that he wanted me to address, and I'm not going to go through them one by one, but instead I'm going to try to address them maybe under three headings. I'll talk to you a little bit about a brief history of the commission. The LCWM is what we affectionately refer to it as. I'll tell you a little bit about how we operated, and also at least my perspective on why I thought we were why we were effective. But first, I want to give you a little bit of a disclaimer. You have my recollections from 13 to 22 years ago, and that's relatively, for me, that's a relatively daunting task. So first, I had very few specific details. As I started thinking about it more, many more clear recollections came to mind. So I'll try to cover what I can, and then any questions that you might have, you want to go into more detail on, I'd be happy to respond to those. So first, a brief history of the Commission on Waste Management. I'm going back now about 30 years to 1978, 31 years. From 1978 to 1980, there was a joint committee on solid and hazardous waste. And in a report of their efforts, they gave a brief picture of the times. And I'm just going to read you a short paragraph out of that report. It says, during the mid-70s, the waste issue began to expand dramatically in scope and deepened in intensity. The legislature and agencies of government in the state were confronted with increasing regularity with waste management problems and opportunities, which they seemed unable to address properly. In short, by 1978, despite a full decade of regular legislative activity, the subject of waste management seemed rather less than more comprehensible, and the waste problem rather more than less intractable. Recognizing the need for a reexamination of the waste problem and ways of coping with it, in 1978, the legislature created the Joint Committee on Solid and Hazardous Waste. Does that sound familiar? Their efforts resulted in the 1980 Waste Management Act, and the Legislative Commission on Waste Management replaced the Joint Committee. And a new agency was created as well, the Waste Management Board. You might know it as the Office of Environmental Assistance, which was recently folded in with the Pollution Control Agency. The original sunset date of the commission was 1987, so that was a seven-year life. It was extended to 1996, so it had a 16-year run total. The budget ranged from $65,000 when it was first established to $178,000 was its last budget for the year of 1995. And that included staff salaries, members per diem, additional funds for a few hearings and tours around the state, and the occasional consultant study. I should note that $178,000, at the time we had three full-time staff, so that would change, depending. I came on board well after the commission was established. I was the third and last commission director, and I was there for 9 years.
And what year was that?
That I came on board? 1987.
Okay. So salaries have changed significantly since then.
Yeah. Let me tell you a little bit about how we operated. I'll talk to you a little bit about the members and the staff, what our authority was, and really how we operated our process. And some of the relationships that we had, which were key to the work that we did. Membership, we had 5 members from the House and 5 from the Senate, and they represented both parties. Representative Hornstein was one of the members on the commission in its last few years, so you can keep me honest if you can remember back that far.
Yeah.
Early on, we had a chair and a vice chair, and later on, we had co-chairs, and we also had an executive committee. The membership included representation from most of the relevant committees that our legislation went through, and that was really helpful. Members also from the standing committees that weren't on the commission were invited on tours and received notice of our hearings as well. As far as staff went, the commission, as you know, had its own staff. We had a director, an administrative person, and sometimes we had a research person as well. The director's role was to basically to coordinate all the efforts that were critical to the development, the adoption, and the refinement of the waste management policies. It was a real focused coordination role. We did a lot of work that might be typical of committees, of committee staff. We provided member support. We planned agendas, coordinated hearings and testimony. We organized tours. We researched topics and helped develop legislative recommendations. We drafted amendments, tracked legislation, prepared talking points. We also acted as a liaison between the diverse stakeholders, public officials, business leaders, nonprofits, and the public. And we facilitated, we negotiated, we problem-solved. And I'll talk a little bit more about the effectiveness, I think, of staff a little bit later in my comments. Our authority came from statute. It called for the commission to conduct legislative research, to develop legislative recommendations, to review a slew of mandated reports from state agencies, and generally to oversee the waste management activities in the state. We also had a vision, or more accurately, a statutory goal, and a hierarchy of preferred waste management practices. And it was against that vision that we evaluated all the issues and solutions that we addressed. Every year, the Commission introduced the Waste Management Act amendments, and it was a large omnibus bill. Those of you that were here back then, I think, can recall, perhaps not so fondly, or perhaps fondly, that it took up many, many hearings in many, many committees and was many, many pages long. That bill was based on input from the hearings and the research and the reports that we heard over the interim. And those reports would always contain some recommendations for issues needing a fix. And that was the foundation of the legislation. The members balanced their commission business with other responsibilities. It helped, I think, a lot that we were most active during the interim. We had frequent hearings, not necessarily regularly scheduled, but it seemed like we met a lot. We went on tours. We compiled the legislation. The executive committee put in more time than others, but all the members played a role and helped out both during the interim and during the legislative session. During session, we seldom met. Our efforts at that point in time were spent shepherding our omnibus bill through the process. We tracked all the other waste legislation, the bills and amendments that were working their way through the process, and we'd work with those authors as needed as well. Other than that, we did not, as a commission, formally hear bills we didn't hear bills during the session. We did hear proposals and ideas during the interim. Some of those would make their way into our omnibus bill. Some of those would make their way into their own bills that worked their way through the process. We did a lot of research and studies. As I mentioned, we'd usually direct a state agency to do that research and report back. Sometimes we did the research ourselves, and occasionally we contracted with a consultant for a study. I've been told by others that one of the most unique aspects of the commission was its partnership approach. That was both internal and external. Internally, the staff had a very close relationship with staff from the committees and House and Senate research. We tracked each other's bills and the legislation, of course, went through all the standing committees. Externally, with state agencies, we had a very close relationship at that time, especially with the Office of Environmental Assistance, then the Waste Management Board, the Pollution Control Agency, the Metropolitan Council. In the early days, when the Waste Management Board was first created, their legislative agenda and budget came directly to the commission rather than going through the governor's office. That's doesn't happen in between the branches anymore today, but that was a symbol, an indicator of how closely related the two organizations were. They would conduct research, report back to the commission, and often recommend policy changes resulting from the research directly to us. Again, they wouldn't go into a proposal that went into the whole governor's process and came back. It came directly as recommendations to the commission.
I think that's also a key to your credibility, and that's something that we're very interested in, is, you know, developing the credibility of our Legislative Energy Commission and seeing it as, you know, something substantial that can make recommendations and is a key player.
In later years, it wasn't non-controversial, the fact that we had that.
It wasn't
non-controversial.
Yes,
it,
I understand.
It was controversial, somewhat controversial, but it was a very essential way of how we operated and did our business. They provide a lot of input in the crafting of the legislation, and as you referenced, I think there was a strong professional trust between us and a sense of confidence in one another. We also work closely with stakeholders, local governments, waste haulers and facility operators, and waste generators. And the result of that was sort of the politics were somewhat diffused. This resulted in perhaps a little bit less lobbying, but really more good policy, in my opinion. I want to talk to you a little bit about how effective we were. And, of course, this is, in my opinion, I think we were very effective, but it depends on how you define effective. Did we solve the problem once and for all? Obviously not. We played a huge role, but there was so much that was outside of our ability as a commission to control, even as a legislature to control. For example, the ability to direct by law where waste would go, which facilities the waste would end up at to be managed. Can you judge effective by volume? Probably not, but we generated a huge amount of legislation every year. And perhaps job creation? We sent a lot of lobbyists' kids to college, but I don't think that counts. Perhaps the best judge of effective is by comparison to the waste policy world without the commission. If you look at the present, there are many that would agree that progress has largely stalled since the commission sunset 13 years ago. I've heard from those that are still active in the industry that they miss having the commission, and some of the reasons they give was we had a big picture approach. We had strong partnerships, the members' knowledge of the issues, and their commitment to good state policy over special interest policy. So why were we effective? I have to ask you to bear with me for a minute. I tried to not do this, but I kept on coming back to it. I have this picture in my mind of a flock of migrating geese, a big flock, and you know, the birds are all flying around, but they're sort of in this V shape, and they're all kind of headed south. And I have six analogies, and I'll try to go through these quickly for you, but to the reason why we were effective to this migrating geese analogy. First of all, geese have the same they have the same destination. We had 115A02. That was our waste management goals and our hierarchy or our vision, and that was our destination, to move all policy in that direction. Geese take turns leading the way. The legislators work together, not alone. Although the House and Senate were led by different parties, within the bicameral and bipartisan commission, when we were at work, I felt those differences were really put aside, at least in comparison to how issues are pursued without a commission. We had informed advocates on every key committee that we had to go through, either through membership on the commission or through close working relationships. And we even had a director that played a fairly unique leadership role, and I can talk a little bit about that later if you want. The geese know the route. Waste industry is a very complex industry. It's made up of private sector, state, county, city, district government. There's issues of public behavior here, and the topics cover waste reduction and recycling to collection, processing, landfilling, and cleanup. And even the pricing structure at the time was the very opposite of the behavior that we wanted to encourage for proper waste management. The commission and the members took it upon themselves to understand this complexity and to know the players. And that helped them really understand the broad implications of their actions. And this knowledge, I think, led to more respect for the laws and, importantly, the intent of the legislation, and that led, in turn, to better decisions. The omnibus bill that came out of the commission was really the place to get your amendments into. And if you had bills that weren't a part of that, the question was, why not? Geese work really hard, and they're very committed. We were fairly proactive from a legislative perspective. One year I suggested to our chair that we not initiate the usual annual Waste Management Act amendments and instead just respond to bills as they arise, issues as they arise, and the response I got was one of shock. It was so assumed that there were problems to fix and we were the ones to do it that the mere mention of not doing that was unfathomable. My fifth analogy is that geese need to be flexible to changing circumstances like weather. We knew a lot. The commission members knew a lot, but others knew more. We spent a lot of time during our interim hearing reports and based our recommendations, our legislation on those recommendations. And even during the session, the omnibus bill would look a lot different when it ended up than how it looked when we coming in, when it was first introduced, but still it reflected the needs. And lastly, the whole flock flies together. We were very inclusive. We considered many perspectives. We lined up diverse coalitions. And this sort of leveled the playing field for those that were affected by or trying to affect the legislation. The small guys, like haulers and some landfill operators, who were still common back then, they couldn't hire lobbyists. They weren't linked into the legislative process, but everybody had equal access to the commission staff and the commission members. So I can boil this down for you now, I think, to three interrelated principles. One is leadership, vision, and knowledge. I'm cheating. That's one. The time that the members and staff dedicated to the issues during interim and especially during the session and especially over the interim gave them a sound knowledge not only of the issues and people but also the body of law and what was behind it, including the vision. And that helped things keep things in perspective to one another. And the leadership was really reflected in the members' fluency when they were in committees and on the floor. When they spoke up, other people listened. The debates were very well informed. The second issue is dedicated staff, and I might be biased on this, but I believe that it made a big difference. While some of the work can be done elsewhere, I think having dedicated staff made a big difference, and here's why. We had no competing priorities, and this helped ensure that the focus on this work, the issues in front of us, remained on the members' agenda and didn't get put on the back burner. It was about this time, after session ended, that I'd call up our chair and I'd say, so, what are we going to do next year? And we'd begin to have the conversation about what were the issues that were still unresolved, what was the new stuff that was coming up, how are we going to organize our interim to be ready for the next session. So these things didn't get put off till Christmas or when we're ready to start thinking about them again. We had the ability, because we didn't do a lot of other areas, to see the big picture and understand all the details within. And that really helped in the coordination of multiple related but distinct and often competing initiatives to help find the opportunities and potential solutions. And consensus building not only takes time, but it takes trust as well. The fact that we weren't associated with any body, any party, or any individual member made a difference. It went a long way in establishing the credibility that was necessary to work with all legislators and staff from both bodies and from both parties. And the third issue, the third principle, I think, is maintaining a sound reputation. The hearings, the tours, the meetings would help us focus on understanding all sides of an issue before solutions were crafted. Our legislation was really a team effort, and it was based on the research and studies and experience of the people out there. We had an open discussion of the issue and included all of our partners, and the members ended up with a sound understanding to work from as they went through the legislative process. And as a result, up until the end, we had a reputation for being thorough and fair. And even now, 13 years later, the fact that you've asked me here to talk to you today, I think helps justify that fact, that that reputation remains intact. So those are my comments. I'd be happy to answer any questions or wait till you've heard from the other commissions.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Austrian. Are there questions, Senator or Representative Hornstein?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was actually involved in this more as an advocate at Clean Water Action. It predates my legislative service, but maybe I was so constructive that you thought I was a legislator. But I was more of an agitator then, and I still am, but in that context. And what I do recall, though, is, and it confirms what Ms. Austrian has said, is that we were an outside group, and we had a lot of concerns on one particular issue. It was utilization of incinerator ash as road paving material. And it really wasn't much of an issue. A lot of people weren't talking about it, and we had asked to actually get on the agenda of the commission, an outside stakeholder, and it was no problem whatsoever. And I think as a result of that, we set in motion, a number of activities that then this ended up not being a practice in the state. And so we were able to create change through that. But I did have a question. I was very intrigued by, and this is something I don't really remember, but when you had mentioned that you went through a process of putting together this legislation during the interim, and it was really the Legislative Commission on Waste Management that had an annual bill. I think one of the criticisms of at least the legislative, our predecessor, the Electric Energy Task Force, is we didn't come up with legislation. So it seems like that's one thing that we're really looking closely at. How is it that one can have hearings on a bill during the interim, but it's not really a formal bill? You're just bringing in, I think what you had said is you're bringing in stakeholders and ideas are being shared, and then a bill gets put together, and then it goes through the process. But it makes me a little nervous that maybe there weren't hearings during the session formally on that. So I guess I would I'm intrigued by that idea, but procedurally I wanted to see how that worked. And then the second question, and this is the last one, is what would the relationship be with the committee chairs? Because it seems like almost the Legislative Commission was doing things that one might argue were the proper purview of the Environment Committee, let's say. Here I think we cut across a number of committees, but how did that work? Because I know the chair of the Environment Committees were on the commission, but how did they feel about the commission essentially taking over an important part of their committee work? So again, the Waste Management Act amendments, working on them during the interim, how did that quite work? And then the relationship with committee chairs would be my questions.
Ms. Austrian.
Chair and Representative Hornstein, those are two very meaty questions. There's a couple of people sitting behind me that were at the time legislative staff and probably have vivid recollections of this as well. I'm not sure if their faces turn green when you ask that, but I'll tell you what I recall. We would hear these reports. When we'd ask for a report to be done through the prior year's Waste Management Act amendments, we'd set the due date for that report early enough during the interim that so they might have a little over a year to do the report and get back to us early enough so that we could hear the report. And we'd invite the committees to come and listen if they were interested. We'd ask our questions. We'd understand the recommendations. We'd get sometimes even testimony on the recommendations. Those reports were often done on agency side with input from stakeholders as well. We would use that information as the foundation for writing a bill. That bill, before it was introduced in draft form, came back through the commission, and it was heard. Members had a chance to ask questions. Stakeholders had a chance to testify. They would see it in advance, provide comments. This was all before the bill was introduced. And then when the commission members were relatively comfortable with it, they would be prepared to have it finalized and put into the hopper. And then it went through the whole legislative process. It went through all the committees. So the background, bills can be drafted in any number of ways. Some have more input, some have less input. But once session began and that bill went through the process, it was treated just like any other bill. What might be different is that on many of the issues, there was a greater consensus. A lot of the sausage had been worked out during the interim, but it was not a slam dunk. There were tough issues in there, and as I said, as it went through the process, there were still a lot of changes. But the members, the authors of the bill, and the members of the commission were very well informed about what was in the bill and why it was there and how it related to the bigger body of waste laws. So they were able to have a very informed discussion. Does that answer your first question?
Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
And the second question was, how did the committee chairs feel about having this commission? By the time I came on board, perhaps some of those early relationship issues had already been addressed. I can't speak to those. Sometimes our co-chairs were chairs of the committees. Sometimes they weren't. And sometimes it differed between the House and the Senate. It amazed me when they were the chairs, how much work they could actually do and how much knowledge they could actually retain from everything that's on their plate. But we tried to have a very open relationship. Sometimes there are members that would work more as an individual author of a bill and take it through as though it was their own bill. Sometimes it was an extremely collaborative, all the co-authors on the bill were the members of the commission. Every once in a while, if we knew we had to go through a really tough committee, we'd get a co-author from one of those committees, anticipating where it had to go, so that we could have somebody to help us on your side of the table as it went through the process. The members were the ones that presented the bill. So it was treated just like any other bill. It just happened to be a big one.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Austrian, how often did the commission meet? Did it have regularly scheduled meetings, or were they called as necessary?
I don't recall exactly. During the interim, we probably met. We could look this up in the archives. My guess is maybe we met monthly, but I don't think it was a regular schedule.
Were there subcommittees or were there other meetings in between the regular meetings of the commission?
Not much. There were subgroups that might work a little bit more on a subject, but I don't recall us having official subcommittees.
And did you have to hire consultants?
I can remember a couple of studies during my time there where we did hire consultants. Usually we relied either on the state agencies or we did it ourselves.
Okay. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is more of a comment versus a question, but Ms. Austrian mentioned the need or the responsibility of the commission to figure out who their partners were, how important that is. And I'm very delighted, and I think that you, Madam Chair, and Chair Hilty have that same desire to figure out who our partners are, who will help us develop our credibility. And I don't know if we've ever had that discussion yet, really, who our partners are. So at some point, I'd like to delve into that.
Okay.
Knuth.
Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question, you talked about having a vision and referenced a statute, and we have some statute that, you know, with greenhouse gas emission reductions, goals and things like that, that are relevant to this committee and the renewable energy standard. And I'm curious, was your vision set in statute and kind of agreed upon before the commission formed, or did you have discussions on that ongoing or at the beginning and trying to figure out how we get our heads around that with this commission?
Ms. Astrian.
The original section 115A02 has been amended. It was originally introduced in 1980 and amended 1, 2, 3, 4 times. And the reason I'm responding that way is that we started out with what we thought it needed to be. And every time it was amended, there was a discussion about how it should change and why it would change. But you're always starting with something. And if there were good enough reasons, it would change. We learned a lot about the waste management industry as we progressed over those 17 years. And I think it would have been folly not to use that knowledge to update our vision. But we always had it to come back to judge our actions against. And the changes that were made were really more so not in the goal of waste management, but in the details of the hierarchy. As waste management became a little bit more refined, there was always a question, should this be above that? Should this include that? And so there was tweaking some of the waste management preferences.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you. And next we'll hear from Susan Schmidt, who's the former director of the Legislative Water Commission.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the commission. Again, my name is Susan Schmidt, and I was the director of the Legislative Water Commission 1992 through 1996 when it sunset. And I'm currently, as the agenda says, the director of a nonprofit organization called the Trust for Public Land here in Minnesota. I'm going to we decided Kim should go first. We had a chance to visit on the phone a little bit after talking to both Will and Bob, but they have a longer history at the Waste Commission, and the Water Commission existed the last 6 years of your life as well, 1990 through 1996. So I'm going to just briefly describe the Legislative Water Commission, respond to the questions, looking first at how we operated, and second to the question of effectiveness, and then third I'll talk about some of the principles that in hindsight particularly I think were important to us. So a description. The Water Commission, as I refer to it as, LWC Moore Water Commission, was created as a part of the 1989 Groundwater Protection Act. And it really, in my view, our view, it was really the legislative concern, public concern about the drought of 88 and 89 that really led to the legislative discussion of groundwater and groundwater protection and the interrelationship with water quality on the surface. And that's what led to the legislature's passing of the Groundwater Protection Act, Chapter 326, the 1989 session law. It's most of those, if my memory serves me correct, are in Chapter 103, and it really set out that broad goal that we talked about. It is non-degradation of groundwater. It's, again, prevention of pollution of groundwater to begin with. And then the interrelationship of human activity on the ground and how that might affect it, and getting ready, preparing, if you will, for how activities on the ground could impact that water quality. So that's the set of law, if you will. And then monitoring and working with the agencies on implementation. So really the vision was that the Legislative Water Commission was created in that same law, and it would oversee implementation of this fairly complex set of laws related to groundwater. We had 10 members. It was bicameral, bipartisan, and the chairs rotated between the House and the Senate. And I have fond memories, of Willard Munger was the chair on the House, the first chair, and then it went to Steve Morse, and then it went back to Henry Collis, and then it went to Len Price, and that's my memory of chairs. We didn't have co-chairs. We had a chair and a vice chair. So it all incorporated. And Senator Steve Dill, who is not here, I was hoping he would be here, but he served on the Water Commission his whole life, so feel free to talk to him about these same questions. And he was a very active member. So the questions, again, operations first. How do we interact with standing committees? And some of this I'm going to try to just shorten up because it's similar to what Kim is saying, but we had great relationships with the standing committees, and I think we were really viewed as hopefully enhancing what they could and couldn't do given the time frame of the legislative session, and helping with priorities and really dive into issues more deeply as they related to water, which freed up the Natural Resources Policy Committee and the Finance Committee to really look, you know, perhaps at other environment natural resource issues. We had great relationships. There was always overlap with the members of the Water Commission and the two standing committees that were most relevant to our work. And there was usually overlap with LCCMR. Of course, at the time it was LCMR. And we also had overlap with the bonding committees, and there was some interplay there with wastewater treatment issues. We were oftentimes asked, and again, I wasn't the first director. There was an initial director, Pat Johnson. I was the second. So maybe she really addressed some of those startup relationship issues. But, you know, we always had the chairs and their staff asking us, you know, will you work on this? Will you work on that? It's really of interest to our standing committee and vice versa. And then we would make sure we were informing them and involving them in all the work that we did. So we had great relations. Second question, we developed and recommended legislation, and we reviewed legislation at the request of members, not on our own, but at the request both of the LC Legislative Water Commission members and other legislators. State agencies, we had many we worked with because the Groundwater Protection Act was a complicated one. In Minnesota, of course, we pollution control agencies involved, the Department of Natural Resources, Department of Health, Department of Agriculture, Board of Water and Soil Resources, Environmental Quality Board, Metropolitan Council, and I'm probably forgetting one, Public Facilities Authority. So we really had weekly, monthly work with agencies. Of course, if our job was overseeing implementation of the Groundwater Protection Act. So a set of our meetings every year was, how's it going? What problems are you running into? What are relationships? You know, what are you finding? What are the outcomes? What are you doing about it? What are you not doing about it? How's it related to the budget issue? Why aren't you doing certain things, et cetera? So we had good working relationships, as Kim said, with all the agencies. Meetings, we were semi-regular, if you will, somewhere in between. But I think what was important for the members of the Legislative Water Commission and the legislators and their staff that we worked very closely with is that we have some kind of schedule. And so what we would do is, of course, look at the Groundwater Protection Act, and then there were related laws after that, and interests related to water that weren't specific in the Groundwater Protection Act. We would develop a strategic work plan, if you will, for the year, and it almost became a rolling work plan so that the next year we'd add a few more and get rid of a few that we'd already addressed, et cetera. So it was that strategic work plan, if you will, that we tied to budget, and then we'd come up with a timetable for meetings, and we'd hopefully schedule those meetings so it worked for the LWC members, and we could look out through the interim and say, you know, we're going to have a meeting in September. It's all about local water planning. It's about the effectiveness of local water planning. If that's your interest, then you want to tee up for, you know, getting involved in that particular meetings and the preparation leading up to it. So I would say that was really critically important. And then, of course, scheduling tours and hearings. And jointly with LCMR at the time, the bonding committee in this particular case, and the standing committees as well. So we were able to plan ahead and make sure people knew that. That was a really important function, I think, and allowed us to do our work. The function of the director, I think most importantly, was that coordination and strategic planning, if you will. How do you look at the act, bite off what you can chew, so to speak, listen to what the members are saying, what they want to hear, and how they want to monitor, and develop a plan that makes sense in people's time frame accordingly. And then obviously meeting preparation, follow-up. We did issue research. I mean, of course, I was the only staff. We had a half-time admin person that we shared. But really, I did issue research, not unlike a staff person of a committee, and then summarizing that for the members. And then finally, very much a outreach, a support person, a reference point. I mean, constituents for members would say, well, call up Susan. She'll know something about that water issue you're asking questions about. Or a standing committee staff would say, boy, you know, you might want to talk to the Water Commission. They did some hearings on that. So it was a real, I think, a helpful source of support for legislative members individually and as on a particular issue. is a director necessary? My bias is that a dedicated staff person is necessary. I think there's different ways to get at that, in my opinion. Was there an overarching vision? Yes, there was, and it preceded us, and it was the legislature passage of the Groundwater Protection Act, which was the overarching vision. I do want to say that we were proactive in our monitoring of that, at which we were asked to be, but we were also reactive. There were issues that came up that weren't in the law related at that particular point to water supply issues in southwestern Minnesota and local water planning and septic systems, and they weren't directly in the law, but they were of interest and certainly related because we knew surface water and groundwater were interrelated issues. So we were first proactive, but also reactive, and I think that made sense. We had the authority to have standing committees. In fact, the law directed us, asked us to give us authority to have a standing committee on groundwater and surface water, but we never did that, and I was interesting as I was just reviewing the law. I would suspect it's because we had our hands full and didn't really want to split into subcommittees because we were small enough as it was. We did have working groups, interestingly enough, and I saw that in your bylaws, where we would work with certain agencies on particular issues. Septic systems comes to mind, and sustainable agriculture, another issue related to water. And yes, they did report back and usually had some kind of written work group report back to the full commission.
Let me ask you, you said that you were proactive as well as reactive. How would you be reactive? I mean, would you write reports or letters of advisory letters, or did you testify at legislative committees, or how were you reactive?
It was usually, Madam Chair, members of the commission, it was usually conducting some research on that particular topic. So say septic systems, and failing septic systems was a big issue when the commission existed, and it wasn't directly in the Groundwater Protection Act, but it was an issue of great concern around the state at that time. And so we were reactive in the sense that constituents were asking about it, the public was asking about it, there were problems related to it, legislators were saying, look into this. And so we'd usually conduct research, hold hearings, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Or it might lead to legislation in that particular case. It did a couple of years later, but that's what I mean by reactive. Activity level. I would say we had 10 members, and it was, you know, roughly 7 that were most active at any one point in time. And I think since we focused our activity on the interim and on purpose, they were quite active because they were interested in the topic and wanted to be involved, and that was an issue of concern, and they knew it would relate to their district and what they thought was important for the state and then their upcoming legislative session. So they were quite active, and I think we very much complemented the standing committees because during session then we were very much support, and we weren't holding hearings and meetings, et cetera. So we were available to review and answer budget questions and et cetera. And we didn't have a bill every year, so that's a difference. You know, that could have happened if we had a longer life, whether that's right or wrong, but we didn't have an annual water bill. We didn't. We had individual bills on individual issues related to that, and then budget issues that really were related to implementation of the law more than anything. Our budget was about $100,000. My memory, Greg could help me here, $100,000 to $120,000 a year, and that was the director, an admin assistant. The per diems were included in our budget, and the travel and the hearings, associated with that. We could enter into contracts. My memory is we did once with the department over at the U on a research study related to sustainable agriculture. But otherwise, and I think practically speaking, we asked the agencies. You know, of course, we had 7 that we were working with pretty closely, and we'd ask them to help organize these studies. And I think they were generally very eager to do so, no surprise. But what the commission was able to do was put some expectations on that. So the agencies weren't just giving us what they wanted, so to speak, but we could provide the guiding questions, if you will, that were important to the Water Commission members as a whole and individually. We'd give them the guiding questions. We'd give them a timeline. We'd shape the methodology. We'd make sure they were talking to a number of different voices and not just their own. And then we, most importantly, we made sure that their report back was a succinct one. It was related to the particular questions we were interested in, and it was available in a meaningful period of time for the commission. Effectiveness, and again, this is in you know, obviously me listening to people, but, you know, I would say the members of the Legislative Water Commission, the agencies that were involved and the stakeholders would, you know, all say that we were very clearly effective. I kind of view it as we were on the road to being even more effective, but we existed only for 6 years. You know, we were slated to sunset. That was the intention of the Groundwater Protection Act when we were created, and we indeed did sunset in 1996. I think people would say we were effective and on the road to being more effective because we were able to dissect and sort through complicated issues in the interim, which really complemented the legislative session and the other very important issues that were happening during session. We were able to monitor a big idea, a big vision that the legislature had through the Groundwater Protection Act and track that using that same framework, some of the same people, some of the same methodologies, if you will. We were very clearly resource and support to our commission, but to the individual members of standing committees, LCMR, and other legislators individually. I say we complemented. We were an easy access point, a comfortable access point during the interim, not during session. So if I were to summarize, Madam Chair, members of the commission, the principles in retrospect that seem clearly important, it's obviously that we were bicameral bipartisan and that we overlapped with members of the standing committees. So that was clearly one of the principles. Another one is that we had the overarching vision to start out with, Representative, that the Groundwater Protection Act was, you know, it predated us. That was what it was all about. And, of course, since then, things have changed and water policy has changed, and we all know that, but that was critical and a critical principle. We knew where we were, where we wanted to go. It was just a matter of figuring out how we would get there. And we were very clearly a principal assisting and supporting the legislature. That's what it was all about. It wasn't taking on a life of our own, so to speak. And I think hopefully through our meeting schedule and our hearings and our work plan every year that had a budget that complemented, hopefully it did that. We were an entry point, and we really strove to be an entry point and a comfortable entry point for the public, for stakeholders, for agencies, and for legislators and their constituents. And I think we were, you know, very – I think it's interesting in this day and age with the Internet and that kind of easy access whether there's a difference here. And I do want to point that out because I remember the commission's Internet was just coming online, and it was really – this is a new world, but I will point that out. Dedicated staff of some sort. And then finally building in that review – I think was critical. I was glad there was a slated sunset date. It gave us an opportunity to say, should this continue or not? And I'm a believer that I think, you know, I've found the legislature in has deemed it appropriate to form a commission from time to time to deal with complex issues that they want to dive deeper into. And it doesn't necessarily mean it needs to exist forever. I mean, I'm a firm believer in that. And obviously the Water Commission was one of those decisions that lasted for 6 years, and I think an effective one in that period. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'd be glad to.
Do you think that you were able to accomplish things that wouldn't have been possible had you not existed?
Madam Chair and members of the Commission, I think very clearly yes. I'd love to have you ask members of the commission. Of course, you know some of those names I mentioned, and be sure to ask Senator Dill. But I think very clearly, yes.
Okay. Questions? Thank you, women. Thank you very much for your testimony. It's been very helpful.
Great.
Next, I'd like to call on Shannon Anderson and Katie Kavanagh, who are staff for the Healthcare Access Commission. I guess acting staff. And they've been more recent, having really worked most ardently during the past 2 years toward healthcare reform. And so we'd like to hear about your experience with the Healthcare Access Commission and how you promoted reform.
Great. Well, Madam Chair, as a member of the Commission, Shannon Anderson, staff, or I guess current staff for Healthcare Access Commission as well. It's really weird to be sitting on this side of the table.
Ms. Anderson, please move your just turn the microphone up towards your mouth a little bit more, and it'll pick it up better.
All right. Well, Katie and I were both acted as staff to the Healthcare Access Commission during the 2007 interim. And I just thought I'd go over a little with you the timelines, the staffing, how we did our work groups, and how we functioned without an executive director. In April of 2007, there was legislation passed that required the Healthcare Access Commission, which is an ongoing group, to make recommendations to the legislature on how to achieve the goal of universal health coverage. We had a very clear end date, January 15th, 2008, which we were required to report to the legislature what the recommendations were. So starting in May 2007, leadership appointed members to the commission, and the unofficial co-chairs, which was Representative Huntley and Senator Berglund, began to meet to kind of discuss what direction we wanted the commission to take and how we were going to go about doing it. So that was kind of where we're at, the point that you guys are at now. Should we hire an executive director? Is there a different way to do this? At that point, we decided that we thought an approach of doing working groups would be something that, whether or not we hired an executive director, we wanted to do. We thought it would be very important to kind of build from the ground up and include some of the members of the community. At that point, we also talked about, you know, who we'd want on it and a timeline, kind of what we would do between now and the January 15th. Starting in June, we had our first meeting where the working groups were established. We set goals for each of the working groups, and the co-chairs of those groups were elected. The co-chairs were members of the legislature, and then the membership of the groups I'll get to in a minute. A timeline was actually officially adopted for the commission, and then between June and October, we met about 1 to 2 times per month. One of the things that we did was we set a schedule in the beginning that said these are our meeting dates over the next few months, and had everybody clear our calendars, which was, I think, a very helpful piece. In November, we asked the work groups to finalize their recommendations. We handed them out each a sheet individually and asked them to write what their overall approach was, the recommendations that they had for the full commission. And some of the ideas were things that we knew would cost money, maybe would save money, and so we sent those to the department to get noted, fiscal noted. In December, we had the commission go over the recommendations that each of the work groups did, and the commission actually adopted some. There were a few that they decided were not the best. And then we began to have staff draft the report. January, the report was presented to the commission for review, and we had a public hearing on the final report, which the commission wholeheartedly agreed to adopt and began to draft that into legislation for the session. To save costs, we actually decided to go without an executive director. Committee administrators and legislative assistants actually kind of acted as the lead and did a lot of the administrative work that an executive director would do, whereas Senate counsel and other people acted as more of the research arm. The committee administrators and legislative assistants did all of the room scheduling and basically all of the basic things that you can imagine that you would need to do. We also tracked the work groups to make sure they were operating smoothly and, you know, obviously had a good relationship with our chairs to make sure that, you know, they knew what was going on with each of the work groups. As you'll learn, if you do the work groups, it's impossible to go to all of them. So, and we also had, under the work groups structure, each of the chairs of the work groups had their own staff person act kind of as the person to send out the meeting notices and things like that under the supervision of the committee administrators. Senate and House counsel, we actually assigned staff to each of the work groups. So, for example, Ms. Kavanaugh was assigned to one of the cost containment working groups. So she made sure that she was the Senate counsel person or Senate and House counsel person at every meeting, along with like a research staff and then an administrative staff. She also worked to actually write the recommendations and work with the work group to do any of the kind of official things that an executive director probably would do. And then we did work with the Legislative Advisory Council and had one staff member assigned to us as well who posted all the meeting materials on the website, and we would kind of feed things to him that we wanted the public to know, and that was very effective. Our work groups were divided up. The Healthcare Access Commission co-chairs, which was Senator Berglund and Representative Huntley. Actually, they appointed the co-chairs of each of the work groups, which was one Senate and one House. And they also appointed the members of the work group and outlined the scope for each work group. So basically what we did was, you know, kind of handed the co-chairs what we wanted them to accomplish and the members that they were going to accomplish it with, and gave them a deadline. And, you know, all of them came back very successfully with some great recommendations. The workgroup co-chairs themselves were responsible for creating the timeline. They met as much or as little as they felt was needed. You know, it was up to them whether they wanted to meet in person, do phone meetings, whatever they felt was most effective. They took care of all of the administrative things from their work group with the help of the co-chairs. And they basically operated independently until the time came to submit their final recommendations. The group makeup, we have seven work groups, I think? Yeah. And the membership, depending on which work group it was anywhere between 13 and 22 members, depending on the goal of the work group. I would definitely recommend 15 was or less would be ideal. There was no limit on the number of legislators to sit on the work groups. We sent an open email out to all of the legislators in the House and the Senate asking them if they'd want to participate on a work group and which one. We sent them the scope of the work group just so we could obviously get as much involvement in that process. And then we broke down the work groups by members of the community. We sent out a call to different advocates, the business community, areas like that, and said, you know, this is a commission that we have created. We have these different work groups. These are the scope. Is anybody interested in sitting on them? And we got a huge number of people from the public who said, gosh, we'd love to be able to help you build this from the ground up. Just by no coincidence, actually, the work groups were broken up. It was about 30% legislators, about 30% members of the business community, which was, you know, your health plans and Chamber of Commerce, and then about 30% advocates and nonprofits who, you know, had an interest in the area. We tried to keep in mind other key partners, making sure that we had union representatives sitting on each one, and then also, you know, made sure that we had some open spots for, you know, county membership and other state councils. There are obviously many pros and cons of using our approach. Pros, you know, we saved a lot of money. We used existing staff resources. I mean, it's obviously staff are not nearly as busy during interim as we are during the legislative session. So we were able to use those staff resources. We were able to engage the community from the beginning of the process. I feel like this was huge for our process. I mean, we had the advocates there, and as, you know, we went through the process and session began, you know, these same members of the working group were the people who were at during session who were out there advocating for these changes that we had recommended. It strengthened relationships between the Senate and House legislators and staff. I mean, I think that's something that we all do as we continue working, but I think that was a great asset. And I think that the entire healthcare community felt that they had some voice in the recommendations by the time we finished. Cons, we didn't cap the size of the working groups initially. We were kind of, we kind of learned as we went along. And I think that if we were to do it again, we probably would have a set deadline for this. We were actually adding members to our working groups while they were in the middle of their work, and probably wasn't the most effective way. For some groups, it was a little too much for them to have all of the independence, and they maybe would have worked better with a smaller scope. And there was some initial staff resistance to working those long, long session hours during summer, but I think once staff got going, they really kind of took ownership over this. And it was difficult to schedule meetings during interim for members of the Greater Minnesota if they sat on the commission and they sat on one of the work groups. It was kind of difficult to make sure that we scheduled the work group at the same time as the commission, so they only had to make one trip, which I'm sure many of you would appreciate. Why it worked. That's all you, Katie.
Madam Chair, Katie Kavanagh, Senate Counsel. I can just give you a couple of my observations of why I think it worked. Several of you here were involved in the Healthcare Commission. Senator Rosen sat on the Healthcare Commission, so it'll be interesting to see if you agree with me or not. The commission was formed to come up with universal coverage for all Minnesotans by 2011. And I think one of the reasons this approach worked is that the chairs of the Healthcare Commission, I think, had pretty much the same or similar vision as to how to get to that goal. So there wasn't a lot of, you know, back and forth. I think, you know, there were different ideas out there, but the chairs had basically a similar view as to what they wanted to achieve. And in that, I think in putting together the work groups, they had kind of similar ideas of what the work groups were going to look like, what they were going to looking at cost containment, public health. There was a single payer group, recapturing mechanisms. So there wasn't a whole lot of arguments or disagreements or discussions of how to approach that. I think the work groups also were very key to this. They were given a lot of freedom. They were formed, the stakeholders were all, whoever wanted to be on there were members of the work groups that they wanted to be on. The co-chairs of the work groups, they really could do whatever they wanted, wherever they wanted to really take that work group within kind of basic parameters, I think, were established. But, you know, what they wanted to do with that work group is really up to that the co-chairs and that work group. I think it was real important to have specific staff assigned to each work group. It was each work group was assigned an administrative staff that did the scheduling, worked out kind of the administrative aspects. Each work group was assigned a lead staff, which was either Senate Counsel or House Research. And we were responsible to do research and to do, we did a lot of, a lot of research, basically whatever they needed us to do. We were responsible for writing with the recommendations at the end of the work group. And then there was a backup person, another staff person, counselor research, that in case there was any sort of conflict between the lead staff, that there'd be a backup. I think that was real important. And there was a kind of a tacit agreement that the work groups were only going to come up with five or six sort of recommendations, some solid basic recommendations instead of, 125 kind of all over the place, that they were really going to come up with some a limited number of solid recommendations. And I think for the most part that was adhered to by the work groups. I think it was real important to maintain the timeline. The timeline was set. And it was adhered to. And as much as, I think by June, July, we were like, there's no way we're going to do this timeline. And, I think it got kind of touchy at points where it was like, oh, we can't do it. Yes, you can't, But we did it. And I think it was real important that we did meet the timeline that was set. And I think finally, if I do say so myself, there was a lot of staff willingness to work. There were 15 to 20 staff, Senate and House staff involved in this. And I think, we put in a lot of work. And I think Shannon and her House counterpart did an amazing job of the overall administration of this thing, to keep it all intact, kind of keep the big picture involved and keep everybody on task. And I think early in the process there was a discussion of whether to hire an administrative person to do that, and in having discussions with the staff it was like, no, I think we can do this, and they did a great job. The LOC was appropriated about $65,000 for administrative purposes, and I believe, I'm not even quite sure if we spent it. There was some that was probably spent on per diem and that sort of thing. There was also an appropriation given to the Department of Health to do some of the actuarial-type studies that were needed from some of the ideas that came out of the work groups, and that was spent. But other than I think it was a successful process, and you know, and we came out with our report, and I think
we're very proud of it. In case you haven't noticed,
I think it worked.
Is there anything you would have done differently?
I think mostly if we would have had a more clear plan to begin with. I mean, we stumbled a lot in this process, but this was our end result. I mean, I feel like in the end everything fell into place and worked out perfectly. So I feel it's great that we have the opportunity to share our information with you, because I feel like I'm handing you like a grade A paper here. Like, we already did the hard work. We know what did and didn't work.
I think you've identified, though, too, knowing what you want to do in the beginning is often the difficult part, because often the plans are formative in nature, and so they become clearer as you move forward in the direction that you start out. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And perhaps they feel like they stumbled because it's health care. It's really hard to get your hands around that. You two did a great job, by the way, but I think it should be noted that at the same time, the governor was having his health care transformation task force. And the end products that both the commission and the task force came up with were very in line, on track. So there was very little communication except for the chairs and some people that I sat on both of them. But it was amazing. The end product, the end game was right on track, and it was it was credible, very, very good. It is an A product. So, and I think you clearly stated who your partners were, and who the stakeholders were allowed to have. They came to the table and they participated, and I think that's a very important part of that whole commission. So, again, you know. And I just want to say that there is no way that could have happened without the wonderful staff. And we all know that we have great staff. So, thank you.
Other questions? Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, I wasn't really involved with it, but I heard a lot of things going on that summer 2 years ago. And the question I have is how the discussions and how it related with what the federal government was doing, and maybe it's different now because of a new administration, and there's lots of work going on in healthcare, there's lots of work going on in energy federally, but did that play into your discussions at all, and how did you track that, or was it not going on as much? Just how did you relate to and think about the federal government in your work?
Madam Chair
Ms.
and
Kavanaugh.
Representative, I don't believe, you know, this was 2007. I don't believe that the federal government at that point was involved and had that vision of what the federal government has now. So I don't think, correct me if I were, that played a part. I think the state was looking at it. It's like, we want to get universal coverage for all Minnesotans. How are we going to do it? The feds aren't doing it. We need to do it. And we need to do it now, and we can't wait for the federal government. It was kind of the thought.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
And the federal government, the Congress should be looking at what Minnesota did in this area, because we did set the bar very high and worked out a lot of the kinks. So,
other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Appreciated everybody's presentation, and that helps us to kind of get a vision for how we can move forward, too. The first meeting we had, I don't even remember, it must have been in April, I think, or maybe it was March or earlier than that, but we did have an early meeting anyways. And at that time, I asked everybody to kind of generate some ideas of what you thought would be important for us to be addressing in this commission. And there is this LEC working group proposal lists all of the ideas that were generated. And I sat down with my staff, and we kind of put them into groupings. I'll also reviewed them with Representative Hilty and his staff and accepted their recommendations. And I'd like you to look at these. And all of this is still very formative also. But the idea was that their energy has broad branches, and there are a number of areas that some may be very interested in, some only minimally, and maybe some are not interested at all. But we thought possibly, or at least I thought, it might be a good idea if we had some subgroups, perhaps similar to the Healthcare Access Commission, that would be working in these areas of these broad groupings of energy efficiency and conservation, energy reliability and sustainability, energy in the environment, energy in the economy, and emerging energy technology. I would like to see these groups take on some research of their own. I would like to see members who would be interested in participating in some of these subgroups. I guess I'd like some feedback about that. I'm not sure how much energy or time you feel you have for this. Maybe instead they should be areas that if the commission as a whole is interested in moving in one of those directions, it becomes more active at that time. Or maybe there are people that really have a driving desire to do some work in some of these areas. I would be interested in your letting us know what groups you might have particular interest in and would like to participate in. My idea, however, also was that we would involve the public. And I wasn't sure whether we would ask people to apply to participate in these subgroups or if we would just hold, announce that we're having a meeting and ask people who are interested to come and participate and it be more of an open process where people could provide input. So I'm open to hearing from you about any comments or questions you might have or further suggestions. Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I like the idea of working groups or subcommittees, but I'm curious as to what you envision the impact of the work being, and that goes obviously back to the previous discussion we've been hearing about what will be our organization impact as a commission as a whole. And so obviously we don't want to generate a lot of busy work. And so one of the questions just in my mind is what impact will the work of subcommittees have? And I guess that's also goes to the question of what impact will the work of the commission have?
Well, I think that what we were looking at is generating ideas to promote legislation that we think is worthy of bringing forward. And so I would see the subcommittees as starting that work and doing a lot of the research and refining it and then bringing it to the commission for acceptance. And then, of course, there probably would be significant changes there. But after that, then, we would probably have it drafted into legislation that might be part of the commission's legislative recommendation to bring to the legislature. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you envision individual members chairing or leading these efforts? And do you also see us perhaps serving on more than one or just exclusively one? How do you view those two issues?
Representative Hornstein, I thought that committee members on the commission members could chair the various subgroups. And I don't think you need to limit yourself to just one group. If you have interests in other areas and have the time to devote to that, certainly we don't want 20 members in one subgroup. So I mean, we may have to manage some of that, but I think that there's some latitude here for members. Representative
Madam Chair,
Weinstein.
Are we going to approve this concept now or wait till the next meeting? And if so, when would you view these subcommittees starting to meet?
It's difficult not having even enough members here to vote at this point. I'm very eager, though, for us to get moving as quickly as possible. And so it's difficult to say I want to let it go. What I'd like to do is to pull people electronically to find out their interest in whether this whole concept meets with their agreement. I'd certainly like to hear more from Representative Hilty about it, too. But I would like to see us moving as quickly as possible. We're losing precious time now as we're moving forward. Now, there may not be urgent energy legislation that has to be passed in the next legislative session. We've done a fair amount of our work already. But I think it's important for us, if we want to be meaningful, to be on top of this and to start looking in a forward manner about where we're going to be going. I don't know if that wasn't very
No, that's helpful.
Clear.
So we'll get polled and then maybe at our next meeting formalize it or something of that nature.
Okay. Representative Knuth.
And I would echo your wanting to get moving on this. The interim goes away very quickly when you start looking at your schedule and the other demands and things we all have to do.
A couple things
I would add. I think what's different between the commission we heard from in this commission is that there is a lot of energy on energy at the federal government level, and it might be useful to look at and have one of the groups see how we interact, and also maybe try to influence that, because I think precedent-setting and leading energy policy that could be useful possibly to our partners in Washington. And so I would add that to this group. I'm not sure exactly where, but I think it would be a useful thing.
I think that actually each group could do that. And would see that the federal government would be our partner and someone that we should be in communication with.
If it's your and maybe it's different for legislators versus advocates as legislators, it tends to drop off the importance, and advocates, maybe they do come because it's their job to track specific issues and those sorts of things. But I do think being intentional about inviting or offering membership to certain groups that aren't as represented or don't have the resources, I think one of the things that struck me on the solid waste management is groups that don't have the lobbying resources or hasn't been as much of their culture. I think it's important for them to be invited in. And I think, like with the Midwestern Governors Association, for example, there was not low-income advocates or people as concerned about. There were people who talked about being concerned about rates, but more from the industry and utility perspective rather than the ratepayers themselves perspectives. And so, just wanting to make sure that there's groups that are very impacted and should be involved that get invited intentionally in that discussion. Either here or amongst staff would be very useful.
Okay. Very good points. Do you have a preference for whether we form a group that is an identified group, or if we just have commission members run a meeting and invite people to come and participate at the subgroups? And do you follow me? Sort of like our stakeholder meetings in the past.
Well, Madam Chair, I think we need more definition than something like a stakeholder group. if you we're talking about a working group and getting work done, I think the members who are expected to do work need to know who they are and have some commitment to that. Okay. That you don't have if you just show up. I mean, of course we can invite people to show up as well, but I think we, if we're going to do this, we need to have clearly defined groups.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, let me say about that. I think what we heard from the representatives from all three of these commissions, and I'm pretty sure it would be the case with others as well, is that they did have some kind of clear goal or vision, which I think at this point this newly formed commission does not have.
Right.
And I'm wondering if our focus initially should not be simply on creating that. I can see working groups certainly contributing to that, but you know, when the Waste Management Commission was functioning, they knew pretty well what they were trying to do. The Water Commission, the Healthcare Access Commission, all had pretty clearly defined goals, or at least pretty clearly defined problems that they were trying to deal with.
The only thing
the commission has there are so many aspects to energy and energy issues in a state, and so many problems or problematic issues related to each one of them that I think that one of the tasks of the commission itself ought to be to try to sort some of that out. The whole reason I thought initially that we should transform the former Legislative Electric Energy Task Force into an energy commission is precisely that all of the energy issues are interrelated. You can't talk about generating electricity without considering the other uses of energy and the conflict and the demand for resources. Not to mention all of the environmental aspects. And I think that, I have not seen any action in the legislature that goes very far to sorting any of this out. How are the energy demands of transportation, for instance, related to all of our other energy issues? Just with the question of fossil fuels, we have enormous emissions problems, of which we're aware. We also have questions about the availability of any of those going forward. Do we really have a handle on what is likely to be the case? We keep hearing conflicting things about the availability, for instance, of natural gas as a major resource going forward. Same thing about petroleum. What is our vision for transportation, a transportation future in this state? Do we think we can keep doing what we've been doing and depend basically on individual automobiles or the kind of trucking system that we've had going forward? What's the role of public transportation going forward? These are all energy questions, and they all are interrelated. And if we just kind of assume that things are going to continue to be going forward the way they have been, and we try to address all of these questions in those terms without really assessing whether what we have been doing is capable of being sustained going forward, I think we're going to end up wasting our time. I think we need to be thinking about a future that is very likely to be significantly different from the past. And before we start questioning about how do we maintain base load electric generation, for instance, maybe we need to figure out whether that's even a sustainable vision for the future. And what are our needs? How does the possibilities for conservation and efficiency affect what our baseload requirements or energy requirements in general may be going forward? Do we really have any kind of handle on that? Or are we just going to assume that the projections made by utilities or so-called experts on these subjects that are largely based on what the growth curve has been for the last 20 years is going to be accurate going forward? I don't think that really makes that much sense. I think if we actually have a role in looking at energy issues and advising the legislature, we ought to be looking at the future and at all of these issues in a comprehensive way before we just start addressing issues and pieces of legislation that are based on assumptions that are really unquestioned.
Representative Hilty, though, we've already passed some pretty far-reaching legislation in the Next Generation Energy Act of 2007. It really has set out the principles for what we have to do. And so our goal is in implementing those recommendations from the Next Generation Energy Act so that we reach our 80% reduction by 2050 in carbon emissions. And we do have, you know, in the statute that we drafted or the legislation we drafted last year, the recommendations are listed. The generation, transmission and distribution of electricity, the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, conservation of energy, alternative energy sources to replace dwindling fossil fuel and other non-renewable fuel sources, development of renewable energy supplies, economic development potential associated with these issues, and then other energy-related subjects the Commission finds significant. But they really are contained in these five areas.
And well, Madam Chair, I'm not saying we shouldn't do that. I'm just saying that if we're going to adopt this kind of a structure, that it ought to be focused on creating the kind of goal or vision for this commission that the others have had,
which we do not have. You don't see that goal of implementing the recommendations in our Next Gen Energy Act, at the MCAG recommendations, as the direction we should be moving. That's pretty encompassing.
Let me say that I think one of the problems with
how we have got to where we are so far is that we haven't really examined those assumptions either. One of the things that has troubled me in dealing with various entities that are contemplating how to meet the renewable energy standard, for instance, is that they seem to look at that as the end of the discussion. You know, that's what we have to do, and when we do that, we don't have to do anything else. My view of the renewable energy standard and of the goals that we have set in the Next Generation Energy Act is that that's the beginning. It's not the end.
Those are kind of interim goals.
Yeah,
we haven't implemented them yet, though. I mean, we at least have to move in that direction.
But somebody has to be paying attention to, pardon the expression, the big picture here, how all of these things interrelate. I mean, the renewable energy standard is only about the generation of electricity. And the assumptions we make about the need that we have for electric power are interrelated with the assumptions that we're making about plug-in electric hybrid or straight plug-in electric vehicles. They're based on all kinds of assumptions that really we have not in any comprehensive way examined or discussed.
What would you recommend for how we move forward on this then? What do you think we should be doing?
I think that the I do not object to the working group idea at all. I think that these are categories that make a lot of sense and that do need to be considered and discussed. But I think that the context in which they are discussed should be focused on how they all interrelate. I mean, we've, for example, fairly recently had a fairly extensive discussion about nuclear energy. And obviously, there are many people that are very strong proponents for the development of additional nuclear power. There are also very many people that are absolutely opposed to it. And both of those camps, and it's probably wrong to describe them that way since I think there are probably multiple camps, but they're based on assumptions that I think that it would be appropriate for this commission to examine and discuss. The people that think that it's absolutely essential that we develop new nuclear power generating facilities are assuming that they're assuming growth in demand that is unquestioned. They're assuming the old base load central generating station model for the way electricity is generated and distributed, which again is unquestioned.
But would you say that broadly our goals are to reduce carbon emissions and our reliance on foreign sources of energy?
Well,
until we refine it into, anything more specific, but generally I think that's an overarching goal, and that's the goal of the Next Gen Energy Act.
I think talking about reducing our reliance on foreign sources of energy is an illusion, frankly. But I do think we need to have that discussion. You know, we're assuming that we have a future in Minnesota with renewable energy and our capability of generating energy with wind power and with solar power and with biomass. Do we have any idea of if to every extent practicable, we maximized our utilization of those resources, how much of our current or projected energy needs would be capable of being met by them? We don't really know.
No, but I'm not sure that we can know that either.
Well, if we're concerned about making sensible policy going forward in this state, I think we should try to get as complete an understanding of that and what the implications are as we can get. I mean, some of the assumptions that are being made that are being made widely by the previous federal administration and by the current one as well about what biofuels can provide for our energy future, I think they're unrealistic to the point of almost being stupid, in my opinion.
Right, but look, you know, like even under, just specific to that one area, under 3, energy and environment, the question is how do we meet our carbon reduction or renewable energy goals? And biofuels is listed under that, along with several others. I think Great. That within the context of these subgroups that we would be able to explore those questions. And I think what I heard you articulating is we still need this our overarching goal. I see the goal as implementing our Next Gen Energy Act right now and these are kind of set up based on that principle because that's what our committee structure has been legislatively up until now. You know, things may change over time. I know Representative Knuth is wanting to jump in here. But maybe we can take a break and let you speak.
Madam Chair, it's on
the same conversation. I think the working groups have some big benefits to them, but if this group is going to do something transformative, we need to be thinking beyond the Next Gen Energy Act and our current committee structure, and perhaps that's one of our major goals during this interim is to put out what our purpose is, which can be a little backwards, but I think would also allow us to have a more all-encompassing and useful purpose than would have come out of the committee structure of the legislature the way it stands now. And when I think about the commissions before us previously, they did have those purpose. I mean, the Healthcare Access Commission, 100% access to healthcare, and then working groups within that. And the Groundwater Commission, I'm not sure exactly what it was, but it was basically to not negatively impact and jeopardize the long-term future of groundwater. And I think these working groups and these categories are helpful, but they're the categories we're used to and have been doing all along. And they develop and morph a little bit, but in terms of transforming Minnesota into a place that has an energy system that meets the food, fiber, housing, transportation needs of our state. I would agree with Representative Hilty that I think it's going to be a huge transformation, and that's going to be kind of a back and forth process. But maybe as we work in our working groups, working as a commission to get the overarching goal, and then having perhaps that one of our legislative recommendations is is doing that more of a commission with agriculture and transportation and environment as one group rather than land use policy, that sort of thing, rather than the Next Gen Energy Act as the only driver. Because I do think that while it was a great piece of legislation, it came out of more of a narrow focus than what I hope this commission would have.
Well, our duties as outlined in our statute says that we shall continuously evaluate the energy policies of the state and the degree to which they promote an environmentally and economically sustainable energy future. And I think that's what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, though, what we've passed is the Next Generation Energy Act. We haven't implemented it. We can't walk away from it. We've done a great job in terms of the electric utilities. But when it comes to transportation or agriculture or some of the other areas, we're doing some good work in SIP, but we still got a long ways to go. But we've got to find ways that we can implement those so we can meet our goal. That doesn't mean that we let go of, you know, what do we do in terms of maintaining the sustainability of our energy future here in Minnesota. So I don't think we're talking, I don't think we're in opposition. I mean, I think we're in agreement here. I just don't want us to continue to talk and not start doing. And I would like us to get active in looking at some of these areas that we can start moving further in that direction. I mean, we've had a couple of sessions now which we haven't implemented anything for transportation or agriculture, really. Some land use legislation. But we've got a long ways to go before we're going to meet our energy goals. And so I think we can't be slack on that while we're continuing to talk about what's our next direction. And I don't know that anybody disagrees about that. So, and it has come to the end of our meeting. And I appreciate the people that have shown up here and have participated in that. And I think that this meeting was helpful in hearing how other commissions operated and how they developed their goals and their working structure. One last thing is that we don't have enough meeting members here to approve our meetings from the March 25th meeting. That's something we haven't been doing in the past, but we do have to approve our minutes, so we will hold those until the next meeting. One thing that we did in our energy policy omnibus bill was to remove several studies, which we've agreed would be done by this commission, but they did not pass as legislation, and those were the SIP study about, you know, how to manage conservation and energy efficiency in our state, appliance energy standard study, the low carbon fuel study, and the residential energy usage disclosure study. And what I'd like to do is just to bring them into the commission at this time and acknowledge that they are work that we will take on as time permits and in the highest priority possible. Any other questions or comments from anybody? Or well, then I thank you for your.
Madam Chair, is it the intent,
and
maybe it's
Sentum,
absolutely necessary that we wait until next time before I make any decisions on this work plan in terms of proceeding?
Yes, although what I would like to do is to again send this out electronically to members, ask for their input, and ask for what areas they might be interested in sitting on. Is any objection to that?
Madam Chair, I think we should try to get that in a finalized form for the next meeting so that it can be acted on and initiated.
Okay. Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it'd be possible then, by just the sheer numbers, that we would be sitting on more than one subcommittee.
You could, although I would like to ask members from the public also to participate. And,
okay.
And we'll try to balance that so that there are, you know, members of the industry, members of the consumers or advocates or...
Mm-hmm.
and members of the legislature or the commission.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm just a little confused about timeline, the expectations, topic of the subcommittee, what kind of report you want back to the larger committee at large. So I just have a few questions how this is going to work. I sat on the Healthcare Access Commission, so I understand that, but I'm just a little concerned about some of the outstate people that have a long ways to go, and then you have another subcommittee on top of that. So I'm just trying to figure out the effectiveness.
All of that is to be determined, but some of these meetings could be conducted electronically.
Yeah.
And maybe even that we could arrange for teleconferencing in some areas.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
But all of that is to be decided yet.
Okay.
I appreciate the questions. Okay. Any further comments or questions? Well, then I thank you for your attendance, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.